Previously on Outcast, Ron Jacobs.
Don's certificate authority, because I trust Don.
Don Smith.
And I can be trusted.
Dwayne Taylor.
They're trusted to handle that secret.
Mark Fussell.
And that's the beauty of it. That's what I love about this so much.
Don't you love that? Can you hear the passion in that voice? That's what I like about, you know, the guys who write products at Microsoft. They are really passionate about the things they're building and helping customers. And that's why they take the time to come on crazy shows like ArtCast, which you are listening to at this very moment, my friend. And I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, welcoming you back to part two of using X509 certificates with Wizzy. It was a very, very interesting Patterns and Practices live webcast that we did recently, and I'm bringing it to you here on ArtCast. So, you know, you won't see everything that was on the webcast, but hey, I'll post the slides so you can check those out. So if you haven't listened to part one, go back and listen to that so you can pick up kind of where we left off. But let's tune in and pick up the second half of this great ArtCast.
And then after that, the service may or may not communicate externally when it checks the revocation status of the certificate. Typically, what a certificate authority does by signing a certificate, they're saying, this is valid information. The party representing this certificate has jumped through all the hoops that I require them to have them, you know, issue a certificate, or have me issue a certificate to them. What they also do is they're basically agreeing to provide information about the revocation status of the certificate. So, for example, if for some reason there's a breach of trust between the certificate owner and the CA, you know, they lied about something or what have you, and the CA decides to revoke the certificate, or if the private key for the certificate's compromised and the holder's certificate reports it to the CA, what the CA will do is they'll put that certificate on a revocation list. And there's a few options in checking the certificate revocation status. One of them is if you're verifying certificates, you can either download a certificate revocation list locally and verify against a local copy, or you can go communicate with a revocation server to check the status online. And each one kind of has its benefits and drawbacks.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was about to say, in many ways, it's just like real life. You know your driver's license?
Sure.
That's like an X509 certificate.
Sure.
You go along there, I take some other credentials and slap them on the table and say, this is who I am, maybe my passport. And they go, We check that, we'll issue one. Of course, then you do some few bad deeds, and they say, we're going to take your driving license away.
Yeah.
And you're on a verification list.
Right, but but somebody wouldn't know that unless they called the government agency and said, well, is that driver's license still good?
So which is why, you may be pulled over by the cops, and he wanders back to his car, and he types it in there and checks whether you're on a revocation list.
Yeah, right.
And takes away your driver's license.
Ah, okay.
So it's all just like reality.
Okay, got it. So let's get into the details. Now, how do we set this up?
Okay, setup is pretty straightforward. For the base scenario, we talk about some more advanced scenarios and some extension points a little later on. But, you know, it's pretty straightforward. General setup, it's required by both the client and the web service application. You go in, you enable Wizzy support. You know, you go in, once you've installed Wizzy on the machine in your development environment, you go to Visual Studio, you right-click on the project, you select Wizzy Settings 3.0, and you enable it. Some of the other things you need to do, and this is where a lot of people get confused, is the certificate setup. A lot of time there's confusion around which certificate to use for what, and basically getting them installed in the right place in the certificate stores. In this case, the service actually has the certificate installed in the certificate store for the client instead of verifying the client's certificate up the trust chain. One of the reasons why we did that in this scenario, and we explicitly required the service to have the client's certificate installed, is because we were using self-signed certificates for demonstration purposes. Okay. Self-signed means, hey, I'm Bob, but I'm the one saying it. It doesn't trace back to a mutually trusted issuer.
Gotcha.
So naturally, you can't trust it back because, you know, I mean, who the heck is Bob?
Right.
You know,
so. But if it was Don, it would be okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I make my own driver's license. So if you need one.
For a fee.
Okay. So the important thing here is to make sure that the right certificate is installed in the right place. And on the client side, you want to make sure that its certificate is installed in the personal folder in the machine certificate store. You want to make sure that the service cert is installed in the other people, just to kind of logically organize them. And that's so that, you know, personal, normally you put your own certificates there. Other people that you talk to, you put in other people. It's just normal organizational type stuff. One of the things is different on the client than, you know, that differs from the server cert when you're storing them is that the client has their private key with their certificate. And one of the things that you need to do is you need to go in and set permissions on the private key so that the client can read their own certificate because it's tightly controlled under access control list. And the easiest way to do that is just to go into the WSI certificates tool and to basically allows you to browse through the certificate stores. You select the certificate and you assign permissions to the identity under which the application runs.
Okay, so let me ask a question here because you mentioned using self-signing certificates. I could totally understand, like, in a development or testing scenario why, you know, that's a lot easier because you don't have to mess around with a real certificate. But are these the kind of instructions that we'd recommend for the production scenario, or is there something different?
Well, for a production scenario, the major difference there is not to use self-signed certificates. Use certificates issued by a mutually trusted authority.
But the same general setup would apply.
Yeah, you could.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the small variations here is on the service side. Again, since you're able with a legitimate certificate that's not self-signed, if you can trace that back to a trusted issuer, you don't necessarily have to have the client's certificate installed on the service.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so some more details here about setting this up.
Mm-hmm. Again, you know, just to reinforce the point, you know, test certificates belong in test or development environments only. Do not deploy to production with them because, you know, it's basically you taking your word for it that they say they are who they say they are.
Scary, yeah.
Yeah. So, and a little more about the revocation status checking. Again, the trade-off there between offline and online, kind of what we talked about. Online revocation status, meaning I'm going out to a service and finding out if this guy's certificate's been revoked, or offline where I've downloaded a list and I check against that. The online verification depends on network connectivity, so you actually have to go out and talk to somebody. Whereas offline, you know, you have it locally and you don't depend on anyone to, you know, communicate with anyone externally. But so, you have to refresh the list. You have to update the list frequently.
So how is this revocation status thing controlled? Is that, like, controlled by Windows somewhere, or is it WSI controls that? How does that?
Well, the revocation status itself is determined by the certificate issuer. But the revocation list you can download, you can install into the certificate store. I mean, WSI uses it to check the verification status, but Mark, correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't think WSI really does anything to control it.
I believe you can, inside configuration, determine how it gets checked.
Right, how you verify the revocation status.
Okay.
Yeah. You can control the behavior of how WSI verifies the certificate revocation status, but as far as the controlling the list themselves, I don't think WSI really does anything to do that, do they?
No, it doesn't actually control the list, but you can control whether it checks locally or it goes offline.
Okay,
and
so
that's in the tool, in the settings tool.
Yeah. If I am making my Ron's stock trading app, so I want to make it so it works on people's laptop when they're offline, would I then want to tell it to download the revocation list and do the offline check? Because if they're sitting in the airplane and they want to enter a trade, they're going to need to do a revocation check at that point?
Yeah, it just depends how often you update your list. So the big difference, again, is perf.
Yeah.
Performance in terms of when you get a request in. So you're going to get your message in, and if you've got your local list cached here that you've downloaded at some point, you can do your authentication checks very quick. If you decide to do that authentication check by going offline, it'll take you much longer to validate that particular certificate. So effectively, you have a trade-off there in the sense of, you know, you'll make your per-message processing takes longer.
Okay. Well, I guess it doesn't, you know, in the offline scenario, I'm not going to be able to send the message with WSI while I'm on the plane anyway because I'm offline. Yeah. So anyway, okay.
Well, not only that, but it'd be the client, so you would be verifying the server's certificate.
Right. So yeah, you got a good point there. Okay. All right. So some more details about the client application then. How do they set that up?
Well, basically, you go into the WSI settings tool, just right-click on the project in Visual Studio, and you enable policy. And their options are very straightforward. You secure the client using certificates. You go in, you select the client certificate, you browse through the certificate store to find that. if in the scenario to kind of as the decision point between the mutual certificate 1.0 security and mutual certificate 1.1 security assertions, one of the things that drives that in the WSI settings tool is whether or not you enable the WSecurity 1.1 extensions, which I believe are enabled by default, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, okay. That's right. They have been.
Yeah. So whether you check that box or not, the tool, you know, determines whether or not to use the mutual certificate 1.0 or mutual certificate 1.1 security assertions. For protection options, you can specify different options of signing and encrypting, and this is kind of a whole topic of discussion all by itself. Generally speaking, you know, we'd recommend you encrypt the message, you sign the message, and then encrypt the message signature to help protect it against offline attacks if it's intercepted. One of the scenarios where that may not apply is kind of like what we talked about, leveraging the advantage of message layer security, where you have an intermediary who needs to process the message and may require access to the signature unencrypted so that it can verify the signature or you know, verify the identity of the sender and then route the message that way, for example.
This is the beauty of patterns and practices right here, because you know, it's like when you read the product documentation, it'll say, oh, here's the, you know, 10 options you could do here, blah 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 blah, and tells you all about them, but you know, sometimes you're reading that and you go, just tell me which one should I do, you know. And so this is great that you kind of given me some direction. Okay, so we're going to see a little demonstration now, right? So Mark, go ahead and take us to that sharing slide.
Actually, it's going to be Dwayne.
Dwayne, sorry. Yeah. Dwayne, go ahead and take us to that, and let's take a look.
All right. Basically, what we're going to do is walk through a solution. Now, this is quick start code that we created for the web server security guidance.
Oh, by the way, to our listeners, if you press F5, you'll see a nice full screen view of this.
And before Dwayne gets started showing you the code and the demo, these quick starts are available on the got.net community workspace that is also that I think there's a link in the deck somewhere, but there's also a link when you go look at the security guide that I was showing earlier. When you click on the link to that, you'll see the community workspace. You can get the quick starts from the workspace. And keep in mind, these are quick starts. These aren't reference implementations. There's not necessarily trying to illustrate best practices, but we got so many requests from people that were reviewing the security guide. They were like, oh, all this code and the implementation patterns is great. Can't you just package it up, zip it up, and let me download it so I don't have to type it all in? That's effectively what these are. So these aren't full-blown patterns and practices deliverables. They're just quick starts to kind of help you realize the...
Okay. caveat.
That's
okay,
right.
Got
that's
it.
Right.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Basically, what I want to do is just first walk through the code and the policy configuration files and point out some cool things that we found out along the way for some options and highlight some things. First, what we're looking at here is just the client code, very simple. The only thing that we're really doing different here is that there are two things. Number one, when you enable WSI support in the application, it generates a different kind of web service proxy class to communicate with the web service and allows you a few different options.
So this is the client form class we're looking at here, right?
This is the code to communicate with the web service and retrieve our results.
Okay.
And you'll notice that the class name ends with WSI, and that's one of the ways that we tell our WSI-enabled web service proxies apart from the regular ones.
Oh, I never knew that. Okay, good.
And then, you know, the only real code implementation that we require on the client for this is just to bind the policy that we want to use to communicate with the service, and WSI handles the rest. So here it's just service.setPolicy, service being the service proxy, .setPolicy x509, and we call the service just like we normally would. There's nothing else we need to do because everything is handled in the pipeline by the WSI policy assertion.
And that magic string quote x509 is what that links to the config file?
Yeah, that's the name of the policy in the policy configuration file.
We could have called it foobar. We could have called it whatever.
Okay.
We just
okay, got
right.
it.
For readability purposes, we call it x509. And here it is. This is what we talked about, our mutual certificate 1.0 security turnkey policy assertion. We've got several settings here, and we spent a lot of time on these, but I just wanted to try and highlight some of the key features or key settings that pertain directly to the solution. We've got lots of settings here. One of the things that's a potential gotcha is if you're after interoperability and you are using the mutual certificate 1.0 security for a reason to interoperate, one of the settings that you can blow your compatibility on is to require signature confirmation, and that's right here. Now it's going to be set to false, but there's nothing stopping you from setting it to true. Signature confirmation is something that's supported by WS Security 1.1 extensions. So right there, even though underneath for the encryption and the signatures and, you know, everything associated with that, it's using WS Security 1.0. If you come in here afterwards and enable this, then it's going to do things that are only available in WS Security 1.1.
So now, there's a little tool that you use to set up this file, right?
Yeah, okay. The WSI settings tool. And I can go ahead and crank into that right now. Just like I said, right-click on the project, WSI settings 3.0. Oop. Let me see if I can find my policy file here. Okay, there's X509. And we can, from here, from the policy settings tool, we can replace it, rename it, do whatever we want. Let me go ahead and just, I'll do a replace. Oop. There we go. Okay, and then we go into the WSI security settings wizard. And this is kind of the steps that we were outlining for the client configuration. Here we select whether we're securing a service or a client. In this case, we secure a client application, and we secure it with certificate security. Okay, and then it gives you the option for specifying the certificate in code or by doing it in policy assertion. Generally, you know, we'd recommend doing that in policy instead of doing it in code. So what we can do here, and I believe in this case we had it in local machine.
So you're selecting the certificate store from the local machine store.
Yep.
And you found your self-signed certificate that you're using.
Yep.
And then you're ready to go. Okay.
Oh, hold on. Let's see here. I think I skipped a step real quick. Okay, secure client, certificate, and we'll select the certificate. Oops, we're in local machine. We got to go to local machine here. We select our certificate. I'm just using the Quick Start Client certificate.
Okay.
It jumped out. Oh. Just to basically finish the process, normally what you do is you go to the next step, you'd select your protection options, kind of like what we talked about, and from there you could select, you know, your options for signing and encrypting. You could enable or disable the security policy extensions, and then you select the server certificate that you're communicating with, and then you're all set.
You could always add a new policy.
Right. Or you could add a new policy as well, yeah.
And we can just do it that way. Just add a
policy,
new policy
foo. That's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, let's just add
it. Okay. So here we're securing client, using certificate, local machine, quick start client. There are a few extra steps there, but
all right,
it jumped off on me. I guess it's got a stage fright.
Okay, so. Yeah, obviously worried about being on the air here. Okay.
So anyway, once you're done configuring it, your policy assertion will look something like this. There are a few settings in here that we have commented out that we'll talk about once we talk about the more advanced scenarios. But we have this is what it looks like after the policy tool generates it. We've got a store location. You can specify local machine or current user. Generally, you don't want to use current user unless you're impersonating a user from a client app, for example. And the location in the certificate store where you pull the certificate and the value by which it locates the certificate in the certificate store.
Okay, so we got about 15 minutes left. So we got to make our
speed
hard
up.
Calls here on what we want to do. Do you want to keep going here, or do you want to go back and press on?
Well, why don't I go ahead and just open up the service policy real quick, and
okay.
And I'll whip through that. Because
take a quick look at it.
The service code, the only thing you really need to do is specify an attribute that tells which policy to use on the service. So for anybody who wants to see it in more detail, they can download the code and play with it. But on the service, here's the policy cache on the service, or the policy cache file. Again, we call it X509 here. And we actually have an authorization assertion saying we're only allowing clients with this certificate name or this name in their certificate to use the service. So you can control access directly through policy.
Can you just real quick show the server code where you're using that attribute?
Yeah.
And before we jump back to the slides.
Yeah. Okay. Right here, it's just a service attribute that says policy, and it's got the name of the policy to bind it to.
Ah, okay.
Very simple. Okay. And on the service, one of the things that's different about the service policy file from the client is that we've got, again, the only thing really is the authorization stuff. And, of course, we've got, you know, store location for our own certificate as the service and some protection options, which by default you don't really need to specify. These are the default settings. We just kind of have them in here so that, you know, we show what's available in terms of, you know, which parts of the message are signed for the protection.
Okay. And I must say, these policy files look way easier than previous ones that I've seen.
That's one of the beauties of WYSIWYG 3, yeah. We've massively simplified policy such that you simply could just write one of these by hand if you want to. But the fact we built in this wizard and generated this, and there's a few options you can tweak, makes it much more simple.
Oh, it's lovely. Yes. So WYSIWYG policy. All right, go.
So we'll go ahead and I'll go ahead and let go control of that, and we can continue on.
Okay, great. All right, so some security considerations that we need to think about. Where are we storing these certificates?
The certificates are being stored in the certificate store on the machine where the application's hosted. And some of the things that we need to think about are, again, you know, whether or not you pull from the current user or the local machine. Generally speaking, unless the client's impersonating a user, then you should put it in local machine instead of current user. If the client is impersonating a user, then you put it in the current user. In current user in the certificate store. That way only that user would be able to access it, or the client on behalf of that user would be able to access the private key in the certificate. Or actually, it's more mainly about the private key. Another consideration too is access control, setting the ACLs on the private key for the certificates. You want to practice minimum privilege, best practice, only grant access to the certificate or the private key for the certificate as absolutely necessary.
Okay. So this is the thing you were talking about here, the subject distinguished name.
Right.
Right. Okay. So there's a name in the certificate. That was the name in the config file that you said only those guys can get to it.
Right. One of the things about this is that that out of the box policy authorization only allows you to do policy authorization with the assertion based on that subject distinguished name in an X5 and 9 certificate. There's nothing stopping multiple issuers from putting the same subject name in a certificate, although most legitimate CAs will try and be as careful as possible about making that somewhat unique, but there's really no guarantee of it.
Yeah, because, you know, you think about, you know, names represent, you know, kind of worry, right? Because it's like on this friend's computer that I went and looked at last night, I saw this suspicious entry in their startup. And it said servicehosts.exe, you know, and it was like, wait a minute, that's not service host, it's service hosts. There's something's a little scary about that name there, you know, so suspicious, right? But, I mean, anybody could put a name in their certificate, but then, again, you'd have to get it from a trusted authority.
Or it has to be installed in the trusted people folder in the certificate.
If they could trick you into installing it, then they gotcha.
Well, one of the other things is, you know, you've got these huge certificate issuers like VeriSign who issue, you know, imagine thousands if not millions of certificates, and you know, there's nothing stopping someone from requesting, you know, a certificate from one issuer with the same name and then from another with the same name. And those could both be trusted by the guy verifying the certificate. So there could be some confusion as to the identity of the client there.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have a name like Don Smith. I hardly ever see
anyone
else.
That one.
No, I'm real lucky there, actually.
Okay. All right. So, so the security certificates have claims attached to them. Right?
Right. Those are things that describe the party represented in the certificate. It tells who they are, you know, and some other general information about them. But the information in there is not supposed to be volatile. The reason why is the life cycle of a certificate, an X509 certificate, for example, could be a year. And in that time, someone's liable to, you know, belong to different roles within an organization. A lot of that changes. And it's generally a little more difficult to manage that in an X5 and 9 certificate, because in order to put those types of claims in a certificate, it would require the issuer to update it and reissue it, and it just becomes kind of difficult to manage. So one of the ways that you can overcome this is to create a mapping between the X509 certificate and a role store to create roles. Specifically in WSI, using message layer security, you could use an ASP.NET to a role provider and a custom X509 token manager to go into a role store and, you know, look up the party representative certificate and attach these roles to a principal object for that security token. And then you can use the roles for authorization in addition to just the identifier.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, yeah, Mark.
I was about to say, there's a great product that's shipped by Microsoft called AZ-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And AZ-Man does role allocation against some particular – enables you to do authorization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's another article on the MSDN site under the WSI site that shows how to integrate AZ-Man – allows you to do authentication against roles and how you assign those for your application and WSI.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So if I want to do role-based security using something like AZ-Man, then I'm going to have to map these certificates, which don't tell me anything about the role, but they tell me about the user.
Yeah,
and I have to map that into a role, and this is going to require this custom token manager, or this paper is going to tell me how to do that.
Yes, effectively. You can implement a custom token manager. In fact, the paper that shows you how to do that.
Okay, great. And speaking of custom token managers, this is just one of the extensibility points you talk about in the documentation.
Yep, absolutely. And this is to solve two problems. We used a custom X509 token manager. Number one, to give a more distinct name for authorization using the authorization policy assertion, rather than just being able to do it by subject distinguished name, again, in order to avoid potential confusion about the client's identity. We use the certificate thumbprint, which is a hash of the certificate content, and we use that to identify the client. The downside to that is that it's not human friendly. You know, it's encoded values, but at the same time, it gives you a much more distinct way of identifying clients.
Okay, great. So all right, let's take a little look at a demonstration of the custom token manager.
All right, and this is basically within the same solution, downloadable in the quick starts that we did. And the custom X509 security token manager we use, we had to configure in the web.config. And here we have the default token manager. We have the custom token manager commented out. Let's see if I can find it. There we go. Right there, if you can see it, it's commented out. This is our custom security token manager. And this is the entry so that WSI knows whenever it gets an X509 security token, it knows to use this custom token manager class to validate the token. And the code for that token manager looks like this. There's a method that we override. We extend the base X509 token manager, and we override the authenticate token method. And what that allows us to do, again, we just call authenticate token. We take advantage of the base class. And in addition, we set the identity to the certificate thumbprint instead of the subject distinguished name. And we actually get roles. And here we just kind of we dummied in some roles. But normally right here you could use the ASP.NET 2.0 role provider. And, you know, you can configure that to go against SQL Server or AZ-Man or Active Directory to obtain roles and add them to the principal, which is added to the security token. Well, what that allows you to do is it allows you to do authorization on the service based on roles and not just identity. So here we could actually define allow roles, and we could iterate roles that are allowed once we've attached those to the security token.
Ah, okay. So, and that didn't take very much. It's like 5 or 6 lines of code. That's pretty simple stuff, right? I mean, I could do that, I think.
with this guidance, you can.
Absolutely. All right. So, you know, this is web services for idiots. Okay. All right. So, I saw that at the store today. The complete idiot's guide to, you know, I guess dummies wasn't enough. They had to insult you even more.
The complete moron today.
5 minutes.
All right. So there's lots more information about this security guidance. There's some links in here that you can go to. And of course, when we post the archcast of this wonderful recording, I'm going to put all these links there so you can just click them. But you can download the PowerPoint and whatnot. You'll get all this stuff. And there's the workspace where Don and the team are anxiously awaiting your questions and comments.
Yes.
Where they will instantly type an answer to every question that you might ask.
Yeah, this content gets only gets better if people tell us what they want to see.
Yeah, that's right. But you know what? I got to tell you, every time I feature patterns and practices on ArtCast, I get lots and lots of very positive viewer mail. Okay, so people saying, yes, I love that stuff. It's great. So, and of course, there's the link for Wizzy. Where you'll want to go. And as Mark said, just msdn.microsoft.com/web services takes you to the Web Services Developer Center, where you'll find lots of wonderful links. And we're going to do a couple more webcasts, just like this one, where we go very practically through all of the procedures. Next time on the 18th, we're going to be talking about securing with Kerberos. And then on the 25th, the good old username token, right? So we'll get to the classic username token. All right. So we have a couple of minutes where we're going to take some questions and answers. But before we do that, we're going to turn it back over to our producer, who's going to take us to the – wait, the web slide isn't in here.
I am putting that in right now.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I want to say one more thing.
I am going to be putting the survey in right now, and –
okay, so Eric, while you put that in, Don has one more thing he wants to throw in.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Dwayne for putting this slide together and all this content together, and I wanted to thank RDA for letting him do it. And Dwayne's been on the project since day one, and he's been a huge part of this web service security guide that we released in December that we've been talking about. So I wanted to thank them.
Okay, and the survey is now up. There are two options, either registered online or all of the registrants. Please select the one that applies to you. We really value your feedback on this. With that, we do actually have a couple of questions in queue. I don't know if we've got just a little bit of time left. Ron, would any of you be able to answer?
No, I don't think I know the answers, but I have some guys with me who do. All right, so get your hands going on those keyboards, people, because we got time for questions. All right, so. Can you walk through the policy creation? Okay, so that's where we use that little Wizzy wizard, right, to walk through how we create a policy. Mm-hmm. So I think we saw that pretty well in the earlier demonstration. So let's not do that again.
Yeah, we actually have a very detailed walkthrough of that process in the document in our implementation pattern for X509 message layer security.
Okay, you know what we ought to do, Don? We ought to go and actually record some screencasts of just, you know, doing these steps so people could see them happening. Yeah. That's pretty easy to do.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. So here's another question. Do I have to use X509 certificates if the application wants to authenticate with Active Directory?
No, not necessarily.
No.
I mean, you know, you could, with Active Directory, use Kerberos tokens, username, password. You know, you can do certificate mapping and things like that, but that's another scenario. The short answer is no, you don't have to use X509 certificates.
Yeah, Active Directory typically is because you've got maybe some Windows domain set up and you choose to log on to a particular machine. And in fact, this will be a good lead-in. We'll be talking a lot about this with our Kerberos, because that's the sort of thing that you will do. That's where Active Directory will allow you to authenticate a Kerberos certificate. But with X509 certificates, no, you don't.
Okay, so X509 certificates are typically used when we're going outside of a domain, right? I mean, between organizations and we don't have some kind of federated solution like ADFS in place, so we have to use some other form of credential that we can pass around.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, so another question here. Long question. Okay, I have a web service using Mutual Certificate 1-1 Security, and everything works fine as long as I use the self-signed certificates coming with the Wizzy samples. As soon as I use the certificates created by our company's Enterprise CA, I get the following error, Wizzy 910, an error happened during the processing of the response message, and you can find the error in the inner exception. You can find the response message in the response property. Security requirements are not satisfied because the security header is not present in the incoming message.
Well, this probably is, although let's try and analyze this. Have you got the certificate root authority installed on the machine where you're trying to authenticate the certificate that you've generated? That's one thing that it may be.
Right. And one of the other issues, and this is the one I found people have the most common problem with, is setting the permissions on the certificate private keys, setting the proper permissions for it.
Yes. In fact, you should check that one first.
Yeah.
Okay. So if those don't answer the question, then type us another one. Okay.
So, as we talked about earlier, there's a WYSI certificates tool.
Yeah.
Fire up that certificates tool. Go to your certificate. If it's a web-hosted one and it's running on, say, WinXP, you'll probably want to allow the ASP.NET account, which your service is running underneath, to have access to that certificate through the security. If it's running on Windows 2003, you'll have a network service account, and that's the one that will have access to your certificate. So you basically go to the Windows, the WYSI certificates tool, select your certificate. Once you've got your certificate, there's a security tab, and choose the account that it's running under.
Yeah, and Mark just answered the last question.
Right. Oh. Yes, the last question.
Yes.
He's reading minds ahead, ladies and gentlemen. Are there any other permissions required for these applications, namely certificate access? Okay, so we did say, yeah, you have to have certificate access for the account that the WYSI stuff is running under.
The application's
right.
Running under, right.
So if it's running under ASP.NET account, say like on Windows XP or Windows Server 2003, it's running under network service. If you put it in your own funky account because you're hosting it into a console app or a Windows service, it'd have to be whatever that account is, right?
Yeah. Right. It's ASP.NET on XP and it's network service on 2003 server.
Yeah.
Those are the defaults. Typically, best practice, and there are best practice guidelines around all of this, is that you typically want to set up your own account that you want to run your web service underneath.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, yes. So I wouldn't normally want to run under network service because that would require me to give any network service, anything that runs under network service, access to that certificate.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. Typically, you should set up your own account and make all your web services run underneath that account.
Ah, okay.
That goes back to the best practice of minimum privilege. If you have a specific service account for that service and you give permissions for that certificate, that's the only one that's going to be able to get to it.
Okay. So another question. Do we have any SAML webcasts anytime soon?
No, we don't. Now, we have some SAML work going on, and it's actually hidden under the term an STS quick start. We have a .NET workspace for it right now, and we have some work. I believe it's really close to release, too. I should know that. It's really close to release. We have a quick start out there for it. Going to finish the design doc for it today, hopefully. But yeah, we have one going on. We don't have anything, any webcast scheduled yet. So my email address is dons@microsoft.com. So I missed that person's name. But if you want to shoot me an email, I can point you to some more resources about SAML and custom security token services.
Okay, so here's another question. How can I send the permissions for the certificates? I wonder if you meant set the permissions. Yeah, okay. Using Win 2003 server as an enterprise CA, what template would one have to use to create client and server certificates for WYSI 3.0? Puzzled looks from the panel. Have you stumped the experts?
That's heavily on the domain of the infrastructure. Folks in the house.
Is he talking about this? The templates? Is he talking about the certificate authority?
Yeah, I think is that what you mean by templates? I'm trying to understand what the word template means in a sentence.
Probably. I'm guessing that has to do with the certificate authority.
So, I mean, what you can do is typically...
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I know what he means. You know, I think they're using the IIS certificate tool that comes with IIS, or is that where you generate certificates, right? The template he's referring to, I think, is what the name of the certificate is. Or what kind of certificate should he create, and so that it'll be compatible with this?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a web page, right?
And things like that. I think.
Yeah, it's basically a web page. It's an application that's a web page. You go through, you answer a bunch of questions, and it'll generate certificates. So I think what he's asking is, which one do I choose if I want the certificates to be able to work with WYSI?
Yeah. So generally, you should be able to generate your own certificates. You can set up a Windows 2003 server as a certificate authority in your own domain to issue certificates for yourself, which you distribute around your services and your clients.
Yep.
In doing that, you want to be able to generate certificates that enable you to be able to do signing and encryption, depending on, of course, the features you want. But typically, a certificate that allows you to export itself and be able to, as a and be able to do signing encryption is the type you want.
Yeah.
I can't envisage at the top of my head right now the either. Clicks necessary in the pictures in my mind.
Okay.
So, but that's...
I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm shocked either. That you don't have that memorized. I can't believe it.
Well, the certificates that ship with the WYSI Quick Starts and these Quick Starts were used using a tool called MakeCert. So they weren't created using the IIS certificate solution. So that's why we... Don't
excuses,
know
excuses. That's okay. All right. Well, that's all the questions we have today. So thanks to my guests, Mark, Dwayne, and Don for being here. Thanks so much, you guys, and we'll see you next time on Patterns and Practices Live.
Isn't that great?
Wow. X509 certificates. You know, I've heard about these things for a long time, you know, and you hear about them, you kind of know a little bit about what they are. But the hard part is, what are they for? When's a good time to use them? What are the pluses and minuses of using them? And how do you set up an environment where you can use them and try them out? Well, we've covered all of those things in this wonderful guide, Web Services Security Patterns, which you will want to go get, download it, refer to it. Use it often, my friend, because that's why we're here, helping you to do better because of ArtCast. So stay tuned.